and backup plan in case of a power outage. Plus, they have advanced technology to automatically start within seconds of sensing a power loss. Save big on Generac generators. Check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all our great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Don't let tax refund worries hold you back. File now with TurboTax on Intuit Credit Karma. They'll find every credit and deduction to help you get every refund dollar you deserve or your money back. Start filing today in the Credit Karma app.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you in part by your local Hyundai dealers. This is Chicago's number one most listened to sports station. 104.3 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is 104.3 The Score. Always live on the free Odyssey app. WSCR, WSCR FM, and HD1 Chicago in Odyssey Sports Station.
The Score!
Let's see what Harv's got today.
Hunter Harvey is on for the fifth inning. He's looked sharp so far this spring. He gets a lot of strikeouts and does not issue free passes. And he gets a strikeout with a nasty splitter.
Yep, he learned that from his dad.
Got him swinging. Another nasty splitter. Back-to-back Ks for Hunter Harvey. Got him swinging. That's three strikeouts in a scoreless inning for Hunter Harvey.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse.
Thank you to the FanDuel Sports Network for that highlight from last season. Hunter Harvey on the mound for the Royals, and he is the new Cubs relief pitcher. It is Inside the Clubhouse. David Haw, Bruce Levine here on Chicago Sports Radio, 104.3 The Score. And it's time to welcome in the Cubs' newest relief pitcher, Hunter Harvey. Thanks for joining us this morning, Hunter. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are y'all?
Doing well. So far, so good. What's the best part? What do you like about being a Cub?
I don't know. It's still early, so it's all been really good so far. It's been super welcoming. It's a good clubhouse, a lot of good guys, so it's just been a lot of fun.
Hunter, you and I have talked at your locker a couple of times since spring started about this opportunity with the Cubs. The one thing I noticed about you is that there's a calmness about you that, from being a veteran pitcher now, you expect to be good. You expect to be able to fit in. You already fit in with your teammates. What are the challenges of going, though, to a new team, getting to know a whole new locker room, a system with the Cubs, especially their pitching coaches and pitching lab?
It really has been a pretty easy transition here, obviously with Tommy and then they've been really welcoming. They've obviously had some calls in the off season that just made it a little bit easier showing up. But you know, with a lot of these guys in the clubhouse, a lot of big name guys here, a lot of guys you've seen on TV and playing and played against. So it's already had an idea of some of the guys, and just coming in to meet them, it just makes it everything pretty easy.
Hunter, Craig Counsell talked earlier to reporters about just how much he's concerned with just keeping you healthy. He mentioned that a couple times. If you can just keep Hunter healthy, everything will fall into place. Obviously, that's a challenge for many pitchers, but how does one do that? How do you go into a spring training, and what is the mindset, and what is the repertoire? What do you do to try to, in terms of a regimen, avoid injuries, if that can be something you can do?
It's always been, my problem, but I know it's a big thing in this game now. We're doing something that's not natural to the body. So trying to find the right, stuff to be able to, stay healthy. And that's half the reason I, picked this team is, I feel like they got a really good plan in place. And, we got all the resources to try to make sure I can stay on the field all season.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of covering your dad during his career, too, and I talked to him about his splitter, why it was so explosive. Obviously, he taught you the pitch while you were coming up, while you were a kid, and I'm sure you had a curiosity about it. But did he ask you not to throw it when you were younger because of the fact that he wanted your arm to just develop and just develop a fastball and maybe a change so that you didn't have that significant, stress on your shoulder and elbow? How did that work while you were growing up?
Yeah, we didn't start messing with that pitch until think about 20, maybe the offseason of 2018. He growing up, it was always just fastball changeup. He let me start spinning a breaking ball, I think, my eighth grade year. So he never let me do anything too early. Just wanted my arm to try to develop. And, we never really talked much about the splitter growing up. It was just kind of after a few years in pro ball, I couldn't make the changeup do what it was supposed to do. And I said, I think it's time to try the splitter where we can just, you know, split your fingers and throw it like a fastball as hard as you can. And that just kind of took off for me.
We're talking with Cubs relief pitcher Hunter Harvey here on The Score inside the clubhouse. David Hall, Bruce Levine on 104.3 The Score. So when you had some options, what were they, Hunter, and what appealed about the Cubs most? Was it the chance to win? Was it the history of the Cubs and the pitching infrastructure and the pitching lab, or a combination of everything?
I would say combination of everything. Obviously, coming off last year, you know, seeing how good they were, and then obviously the amount of people they've brought in this year to try to get even better. And then meeting with, Zombro and Tommy and talking to them and their ideas on being able to keep me on the field. And, you know, I just think it's just a combo of a lot of things. Obviously, getting to play at Wrigley is kind of probably a little – got to be about everybody's dream at some point, maybe at least get a year to – play at Wrigley Field. So it's just, there was a lot of things that went into it.
Hunter, when you talk about the relief pitcher and veteran relief pitcher, what comes to mind first as far as the mentality? I mean, I've always enjoyed talking to relief pitchers more than anybody else on teams because of the fact that they seem the ones that survive, like you, seem to be so even about yesterday and tomorrow and just focusing truly on today. How does one get to that point? And is that something that you feel is a constant for relief pitchers?
Yeah, I mean, I always tell people when they have people in the office and just friends and family ask, like, how do you handle all this stuff? And it's just, I mean, I've been at the highest highs and the lowest lows in front of, you know, 40,000 people. I've given up 5 runs and been booed. You've had every feeling there can be. And, you know, really when it comes down to it, it's still just a game. I know people get kind of crazed about it, but, you know, I'm lucky and fortunate enough to be able to throw a baseball for a living. So I don't really, you know, let too much bother me. And then, you know, I always tell people the easiest way for me to get over a bad night is, you know, I might suck that night and get my butt whooped, and I go home to a 2-year-old who doesn't care. So you go home and, you know, he'll cheer you up pretty easy. So he don't care if, you know, I'm the best in the world or, you know, the worst. So for me, that's all that matters, is just going home and not being in a bad mood because of something that won't matter in 20 years anyways.
That's a great attitude to have, and you have to have a short memory. But you probably learned that growing up with your dad being a successful relief pitcher, leading the AL in saves, and when you were a kid, and just understanding the mentality, the mindset that you have to have. Every day is a new day, and you can't take yesterday into tomorrow. So I wonder, how would you describe the impact that your dad had on creating that sort of approach and mentality?
Definitely a lot. Him and even my brother. So my brother's 11 years older than me, so you know, my entire childhood was me getting my butt whooped, whether it be basketball, football, baseball, anything, and him beating me up in general. So I guess it started at an early age that I was just used to losing and getting beat up. So if I wanted to keep playing, I had to figure out how to beat somebody that was 11 years older than me and twice my size. So it was always an uphill battle growing up. So I think that just – from having that childhood plus dad, you know, he always talked about the mental game is the most important side of baseball, is being able to handle the failure. And, you know, my brother also kind of installed that in me at an early age.
In closing with you, and David and I appreciate your time today, when you've had conversations with Tommy Hotovy from the beginning till now, What stands out about him? You've had many pitching coaches up and down, minor leagues, major leagues. Is there anything that you look for in particular from a pitching coach? What has it been like with Tommy?
Oh, it's been great. He's really easy to talk to, but I think just the fact that he knows, you know, some of the old school style of baseball, the new stuff, all the stuff with the analytics. You can just learn a lot from him. So and he's really easy to talk to, so that also made it really easy to get along with him.
Last thing, Hunter. So when you look at this Cub bullpen and you look at the Cubs starting rotation, ideally, in your mind, if you are able to stay healthy, what role will you play?
I'll play whatever role they put me in. I told them that. I said, I don't care if I'm pitching in the fifth or the ninth. I said, whatever you think is best for this team, I'm just hoping to be here and be healthy and help y'all win. And, you know, whatever I got to do, I'll do.
Hunter, it's a pleasure talking with you this morning. Best of luck this season. I hope you enjoy being a Cub.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Hunter Harvey, Cubs relief pitcher, added New Year's Eve. I think he signed the contract, Bruce, a $6 million deal. They have high expectations if he can stay healthy. But it struck me earlier in the week, listening to Craig Counsell, that was the number one priority. It wasn't about command. It wasn't about control. It wasn't about pitch selection. It wasn't about any of those things. The number one priority when it comes to Hunter Harvey is that if you can keep him healthy, he will help your bullpen.
It's an explosive arm, David, and the fastball along with the splitter, it can be, you know, if they can help nurse him through an entire season without injury, it's the perfect setup man for Palencia. It's a perfect closer when Palencia isn't ready. It's a big arm, and I applaud the Cub front office for going out there and taking a risk on a guy that has had injuries a lot during his career, but the upside is certainly worth the gamble. It's expensive, but it's something that teams do, David, that are looking to win a championship.
It's a win now move, Bruce, because you have to react and respond. They lost Brad Keller. And when you look at last year's bullpen, as good as it was by the end of the season, it was cobbled together at times, it felt like. And last year at this time, we're introducing ourselves to new Cubs relief pitchers as well. The only holdovers from that group, Caleb Theobar, Daniel Palencia. They'll get Colin Ray, but he's from the rotation. He's a holdover, if you will. But with Maton and Milner and Harvey and Webb, you've got new faces and new arms and new roles to define. And I think that's a challenge for the most volatile spot in anybody's roster.
Yeah, and you know, you got to throw Ben Brown into the mix. You got to, you know, I think he said Theobar, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there is some continuity there. I just think the crux of the whole bullpen is going to look like it solidifying if Palencia is up to taking charge of that ninth inning. I think the rest, you know, barring injury, is going to take care of itself. But that's the key for the Cubs.
I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought that up. This is an ongoing conversation. But I do wonder, you started the program. We were talking about different roles and different guys, and you said you don't want to anoint anybody. Daniel Palencia, I was surprised how early Craig Counsell committed to him as the closer, a guy who has notoriously been referred to the manager who has outgetters. He doesn't have closer setup guys and long relievers, and he doesn't really like those titles because they don't apply. They're outgetters. So this is the same guy. Then Daniel Palencia is your closer. That was pretty much established day one. Are we assuming too much about Palencia in your mind, or is this earned?
Wow, it's somewhere in between, and it's a good analysis by you, David, because of the fact that when you look at Palencia, you know, he failed at the end of last year to the point where, you know, he had 202-mile-an-hour fastballs hit out of the ballpark, and then all of a sudden we heard about it, he was injured. Mm-hmm. And then we didn't see him for 10 days, right?
Right.
And he comes back as a middle reliever, and he rejuvenates in middle relief for the Cubs, had a very good playoff series. So I think that growth, pitching big games in the playoffs, was enough for Craig Counsell to say, look, he was our closer for most of the year. He failed, but then he came back. That proves to a baseball veteran like Counsell that this is the experience he needed. He's going to be good enough, and let's build him up and make him feel good about the spring here, that he already has that job, that he doesn't have the thought process of having to earn that again.
I'd love that.
Yeah, I think that's exactly how I look at the way Counsell's handled
it. I like it because Bruce is somewhat conventional in the way that most people will look at this. So look at the Cub bullpen arms. They all say they have a closer. They'll automatically do that. What's been interesting, though, you have to acknowledge that in Craig Counsell's first two seasons, he has been somewhat reluctant to do that, to take the conventional route to applying labels or roles to guys, even though they might seem obvious. And I don't want to connect these two things, but it did cross my mind, this whole idea about assuming too much about a guy who has been promising and productive. What's happened to Porter Hodge? What happened to that guy? Was it all about the injury? Don't you remember when he was going to be the late inning lockdown guy for the Cubs? At one point in time, he was full of potential and I think short of production, but he got hurt and things got off track. And now he's the guy loading the bases on the first day of spring training and you don't know what you have. So I don't know that you can assume much with relief pitchers who aren't proven. And I just wonder about guys like Porter Hodge and what that means to the rest.
I mean, it's a great point, David. The idea that these young relief pitchers' lives as major league big-time contributors are short-lived sometimes, and they disappear. I was talking to Tyson Miller in White Sox camp, who's trying to make the White Sox team after being 2 years ago, sensational during a short period of time during his Cub run before getting hurt and then all of a sudden disappearing, right? Mm-hmm. So he disappeared last year. He's dealing with injuries. And that's what you're talking about, David, is the game of baseball in bullpens in the 2026 right now. And that is throw as hard as you can for as long as you can right away, and then we're going to dispose of you because you can't get the fastball by people any longer. It's a callous way of looking at things. I think it's a very realistic way of looking at it. I asked Tyone yesterday after his start, everybody asked him about his velocity and how high it was. And, is it high enough to strike out more people and give up less home runs? And he said, yeah, it's important I get to my velocity. And I said to him, Jameson, it's February 20th. Why would any pitcher want to throw at his top velocity now?
That's a great question, Bruce. You know what happened this week made me think of that too? Mason Miller hit 102 on the gun for the Padres. It's February 20th. He was hitting.
Bad news. Right. Bad news.
Why would you want to hit 102 in spring training on your first outing? It doesn't make any sense, especially when we just talked to Hunter Harvey. As Sean Sears points out, he's all velocity and he's all about the big arm. In 2022 and 2023, he had a sub-3 ERA and 10 strikeouts per 9 innings. And then injuries happened. Injuries are always going to happen. And that's why it makes you feel you're just cautious whenever you see a guy go out there and with that high heat and with the swing and miss stuff. And you're like, all right, great. But what can you really count on and how long can you count on it?
I'll mention a name, Alzolay, right?
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yes.
So he was like, a comet in the sky, right? And that's the relief pitching game these days. It's like one baseball manager told me last year, I won't name him, he'll say, it's next man up. We don't expect these guys to last more than a couple of years. That's a sad commentary, but it's the reality of what we see in bullpens now.
Cody Hoyer Isn't he a guy? Remember Cody Hoyer?
Yeah.
He's a guy. He's with the, I think he's now in the Indians or the Guardians organization. And after being in Detroit, and he's well traveled, he's making his way through the AL Central. And he at one point in time had the swing and miss stuff and throwing all the heat, and his future was bright. And he's like, okay, whew, what happened to him?
Yeah, the Cubs had a number one pick 10 years ago, Pierce Johnson.
Yes.
You know, and it took him 7 or 8 years to get over injuries and start accomplishing something to become a really valuable middle reliever for the last 2 or 3 years, you know, maybe 4. So that is, you know, that is the game now. It's all swing as hard as you can, hit it as far as you can, throw it as hard as you can until you can't do it anymore. Because I don't like it, because I explain it to everybody that sees it. I mean, all the good baseball fans in Chicago, they don't need me to tell them that. They see it, right? They see it every game. It's like, next man up. You know, you blew your arm out. You're going to have your second Tommy John. What's more ludicrous than saying, you know what, he's going to have his second Tommy John, but he's going to come back throwing 100 again.
I know. It is. That is the state of the game. Bruce, before we take a break, let's squeeze in a phone call. For guy's been waiting patiently. Mickey is in Park Forest. Mickey, if you're still there, welcome inside the clubhouse. How are you?
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. You guys represent us, the fan. We can't talk to the general manager or the manager. I have two brief questions. Bruce, you hit on it lightly. Why in the world would Council try to force feed Shaw as a fourth outfielder? He's shown so far that he can't hit major league pitching. You have Kevin Alcantara, who's a very good defensive outfielder. Your producer agrees with me that he's probably, next to PCA, the best defensive outfielder in the organization. Why not give that kid a chance? Maybe he can hit. And also, Hoyer, the fourth outfielder is a weakness on this team. Everyone that he has listed there are guys off the scrap heap. Couldn't he have found some player somewhere that could fill that need for us? Those are my two questions. Thank you so much.
Mickey, those are excellent questions. Bruce, how would you answer both of them?
I'll answer both of them by the top 100 minor league players, the players that have become so prevalent, you know, that everybody says, oh, they're in the top 100. We can't trade them anywhere, right? Well, you know what? Top 100 doesn't mean anything to me other than general managers and owners feel we have somebody that we drafted and that we're going to prop up, okay? And then once it gets time to actually put them in a position of responsibility, a lot of these guys are just not up to it, right? So we're looking at Alcantara and we're going, why do they have such doubt about Alcantara that they're auditioning veterans, you know, out there like McCormick and some of these other guys for the job? Why not say Alcantara is your fourth outfielder and he's going to get a lot of at-bats? We don't hear that. So I just think there's a lot of fake news when it comes to minor league players and top tens and sure major leaguers. I just don't buy a lot of that stuff.
Well, right? I think that's leads into Mickey's second point, Bruce. If that is the truth, and I don't dismiss that idea, why not go out and get a more proven major leaguer to be your fourth outfielder? I'm not even saying a guy like Mike Tauchman who signed with the Mets this week, but I think
because they run out of money.
Okay. All right, that's a fair answer then, because they want to stay under the tax, perhaps, because otherwise you might be able to afford somebody who would give you.
Right.
Why weren't the Cubs signing Austin Hayes instead of the White Sox if you're a pennant contender?
Exactly. I mean, they run out of money. Even the big market teams other than the Dodgers, they run into their payroll limits. They run into, we have to save some money for July when we need to add. Right. If we're in the playoff hunt, this is all, you know, general managers are also baseball accountants, and we can't forget about that.
All right. When we come back, it's time to play a little chin music, and you will want to hear this from Craig Council. It's Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce Levine, David Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 104.3 The Score.
High and inside. Chin music, a little chin music. Take that hit of
time for some chin music.
Hey, Unc, how about a warning?
Sure. Watch out you don't get killed.
Because sometimes in baseball, you've got to send a strong message, especially when someone has it coming. Each Saturday, David and Bruce come in high and tight with a response to something that deserves one, like this.
The bench player himself is kind of a little extinct for many teams right now because of the fact that they do use people from multiple positions, and they really value, you know, those extra positions for other things because there's obviously a DH in the National League. So,
yeah.
I mean, does that take some getting used to for a manager or baseball people?
I'm still trying to figure out to put a bench together that'll satisfy Bruce Levine. I mean, that definitely still is something I haven't accomplished yet. And
it is his birthday.
And then on your birthday, it's made me work even harder. You're right. Yeah.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 104.3 The Score. Craig Counsell coming in high and tight, Bruce. How about that?
Yeah, he still doesn't have an answer for me.
Well,
so
it's one of those questions that doesn't really have an answer. It's a typical Bruce Levine question.
It goes back to what our previous conversation was about, and that is anointing young players, number one picks in organizations who are expected to contribute, as that prior caller we had so astutely pointed out, that they're not necessarily equipped to handle a position, but they say, you know what, we can only afford to have four bench players because we have a DH who does nothing but DH, and that is Moises Ballesteros. He is going to have to hit and hit a lot because otherwise he's not an extra man. He's just a DH.
It's a fair point. It is a fair point. Bruce, it also brings up a really good question, and we've waited until 90 minutes into the program to address it. When is Moises Ballesteros going to report to Arizona, and does this delay affect his ability to put himself in a position to make the opening day roster?
The answer to the last part is no. He convinced Craig Counsell last year that he's a major league hit.
Okay.
So he's going to make the roster. He's going to work on his defense as a catcher. They hope he can be good enough maybe a year from now to be one of the catchers along with Maya and maybe someone else. You know, Kelly, maybe he'll be here. Maybe he won't. His contract's up. He's 34, 35 years old. So with that in mind, you know, will he have the same type of year this year that he had last year? So, in the meantime, Ballesteros hits, but he doesn't play a position. So that automatically eliminates him from and the Cubs from having an extra guy, right?
It does.
He's just a hitter. He's just a hitter, and he's not a hitter 162 games because unless he proves he can hit left-handers, he's only a DH against right-handers. Then Suzuki slides back into the DH role. Then you have a combination of either Alcantara, McCormick, one of these major league players that is trying to make the team playing right field. So it convolutes things in a way for the Cubs going into the season.
I got to follow up quickly because I just don't know the answer to this. Do you believe that had Moises Ballesteros reported on time, that extra time might have, or maybe the delay, is impairing his chance to prove himself as a catcher you would trust on occasion? Maybe not for a platoon situation, but maybe 30 to 40 games a year just to keep that bat in the lineup.
Well, I mean, he'll be the emergency third catcher. Maybe they find 10 games, 12 games, and he's going to catch. Maybe they bring him along that way. Maybe it's Amaya catching 80 games. Maybe it's Kelly catching 65, 17 for Ballesteros. So it can be a development year catching wise, but it's such an important position that you for a championship caliber team, you can't afford to lose games by having a catcher who is not up to it, right? And we'll have to find out, they'll have to find out if he is. So that gets back to your original question, David, which is a very good one. Does it impact his ability to prove to them that he can catch here because he's reporting so late? And I think the answer to that is yes, it does, but there'll be plenty of time during the next 30 days of games for him to get in there. You haven't had your eyes on him. He hasn't been in camp, so you don't want to rush him in because he should have been here, in my opinion, he should have been here on February 1st, not on February the 11th, but on February 1st. They should have dealt with visa issues earlier, either it's the club or him or a combination of both, to get him here early, not late.
I want to seek somebody this week who can provide some clarity about just what players like Moises Ballesteros are up against coming from Venezuela, coming from wherever, and the visa issues that do complicate their arrival at spring training and do, frankly, make it more difficult for them to make impressions or to get ready on the same pace as their teammates. But that's another story, maybe for another day. Bruce, since you are the architect.
David, we were told yesterday that he's coming from Colombia. So it sounds like he had to leave Venezuela, go to another country, and then find his way back through to the United States. So it's intriguing. We'll find that out, but we hope he's in either today or tomorrow. That is the hope of the Cubs.
That would be great for everybody. That is very interesting detail to add to the mix and just underscores why I want to talk to somebody who could explain why there are these delays seemingly on an annual basis. But, Bruce, back to the point of the segment, which is how you put together your perfect bench. You are the architect of the ideal baseball bench. What about Tyler Austin? We haven't even mentioned him all spring long. He's a 34-year-old right-handed hitter who hasn't played in the majors since 2019. Are the Cubs in a position to count on Tyler Austin? And if they are, what does he bring?
Well, it's a right-handed bat. It's going to be one that Tots made an interesting statement yesterday. He said, benches, we can no longer afford to have just pinch hitters. Okay, so, you know, automatically I brought up the Ballesteros that he's just a DH. He said, yeah, that's true. He said, but in general, baseball benches can't afford just pinch hitters anymore. They have to play position. So he's going to play some first base, right? Does that mean that Bush is automatically out of the lineup? Or will he also have a chance to DH? You know, again, it's going to be interesting to see how he goes, but that's some right-handed power that can play first base. It can come off the bench. Doesn't really have another position, so it's going to be interesting to see how they use him. They're committed to him with a major league contract for a substantial amount of money, so it's not like he's going to get released, you know, at the end of spring training. He's not getting DFA'd anytime soon.
Is he a good enough hitter to justify using him against tough lefties to give Michael Bush a break, or are we all past that? I hope we're past that.
Well, Council has said that Bush has earned his way to face most left-handers. So, again, maybe the other guy doesn't get as many opportunities, which is fine when you know that Bush has emerged as one of the top young home run hitters in the game. And he had the most home runs of any Cub last year. Well, he was a playoff presence that got the job done. He is a real feather in the cap for Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins and the trade that they made with the Dodgers, who have so much talent that they have to let young players like him, who was an MVP of the Pacific Coast League 2 years ago, go in a trade. So good for the Cubs. They did a really nice job there.
Are these games, which continue today on the Score, 155 pregame, first pitch 205 against the Rangers, are these spring training games, Bruce, in your mind, auditions or competition for Kevin Alcantara, Dylan Carlson, Chaz McCormick, Justin Dean, the guys in competition for that fourth outfield spot, are they being evaluated based on how they perform in these spring training games?
Very excellent question, and it was kind of yes and no answer when Council was asked that 2 days ago. He said, you know, we basically know what these guys can do, okay? So spring training is really not the place where you really try to win jobs. I think he was saying, though, that if your work's not good, that you don't show that you're up to the task, it's a place where you can lose a job, right? Not win it. So I think some of these guys are just going to lose jobs here for some reason, and they're going to have to decide, you know, Alcantara still has option left, right?
Yes.
So you start the year with a veteran, you know, as your backup outfielder, and then as it goes, if Alcantara dominates at AAA, do you promote him and release the guy that's making the minimum? At some point, I think that's a strategy you look at.
I think also, before we go to a break, Matt Shaw is your de facto fourth outfielder. Heck, Matt Shaw might be your opening day right fielder if you look at what this is headed toward and what they might be facing. If Matt Shaw can, as you maybe doubted he could, if Matt Shaw can find a way to track a fly ball, hit the cutoff man, and play a serviceable outfield.
Yeah, absolutely. He's going to be out there. And again, my perception of him having to be really good out there was, you know, it was tempered by the fact that the manager said, he just has to be good. You know, it's just like, Levine, get off the ledge. You know, he just has to be good out there. Well, I think the baseball athlete he is, he will learn how to play the outfield. Will it be 6 weeks of spring training, will that be enough? Time will tell.
Getting some good texts in about Moises Ballesteros. A lot of hope invested in him and his ability to come through and produce the way that his potential suggests he could, especially from the left side of the plate. So there's a lot of hope invested in Moises Ballesteros. All right, Bruce, when we come back, baseball says goodbye to the player who gave us one of the most dramatic moments in the sport. We'll talk about it next. And Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 104.3 The Score.
Here's a swing and a high fly ball going deep to left. That's how you do it. Back to the wall, goes down. It is over the Pirates win. It's the 1960 World Champions that beat the New York Yankees, the Pirates 10 and the Yankees 9.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse.
Thank you to the MLB Archives for that one. That was a highlight that nobody will ever forget. Welcome back Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 104.3 The Score, David Hall, Bruce Levine. Bruce, that was obviously Bill Mazeroski, Game 7, 1960. 1-0 count. Ralph Terry on the mound. Goes deep. Pirates beat the Yankees 10-9. Bill Mazeroski, 89 years old, passes away today. Condolences to his family. Baseball's big loss, Bruce. That is a name and a moment that nobody quite will ever forget.
Got to interview him numerous times, once in recent years, about 4 years ago, for Baseball Digest, along with my writing partner, Joel Berrig, about the game he'll never forget. And that was obviously the one. The fascinating thing, it's the only walk-off to win in a Game 7 of the World Series in baseball history. We know the Joe Carter in Game 6 of the 1993 World Series ended it that way. But a fascinating part of that, David, is the fact that Bill Mazeroski was not the MVP of the series.
How not? How could he not be?
So what happened is the game was tied at 9 in the ninth inning. They sent out the secretary of the Baseball Writers of America, walks around and gives a piece of paper for people to fill out who the MVP was. At that point, it was still up in the air, right? I mean, they didn't know. But as soon as Mazeroski hit it, everybody had to run down to the clubhouse to talk to Mazurowski, okay? And a lot of them just scribbled something, wrote something. Some of them had it pre-written. And at that point, Bobby Richardson of the Yankees had 12 RBIs. It was a World Series record. And the majority of the votes were was Bobby Richardson before that ball was hit. So Bobby Richardson becomes the only World Series MVP in the history of Major League Baseball in the World Series to win the MVP from a losing team.
That's a great trivia note. I did not realize that. I understand how it would happen. It seems to be something that baseball would regret, but I get that these things occur every now and then. That's a terrific note, Bruce.
And who's the only one from an NFL team to win?
The
Super Bowl MVP on a losing team.
Oh boy, who would that be? That's a good trivia question. Do you know the answer?
Go way back. I mean, these two could win you a lot of money at a bar.
They could. I'm writing them down. Who won the Super Bowl?
Linebacker for the Dallas Cowboys, early part of Super Bowl history, Chuck Howley.
Chuck Howley, definitely the Super Bowl MVP in a losing effort. Wow, that must have been. What was the story behind that one, Bruce? You cover that game too?
I did not, and I don't know why Chuck Howley won, but I can tell you this. Bill Mazurowski, you know, rest in peace. One thing before we get out, and that is condolences to the family of a friend of mine, Diane Schwab, who passed away this week. Diane's husband, Rick Schwab, lifelong Cub fan who authored the book Stuck on the Cubs back in 1977. So the best of their family. David, it's been a fun show and a lot of people to thank.
Yes, we do. First of all, we want to thank our guests, Corey Lee, Hunter Harvey. Want to thank Sean Sears for getting all the things lined up and doing yeoman's work on a busy Saturday morning. Bruce, thank you to you for doing all the work that you do out there. Have a great weekend, and it's been a lot of fun. Thank you for listening to Inside the Clubhouse. Steve Rosenblum is next. Keep it right here at Chicago Sports Radio, 104.3 The Score.